This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. On the show today, Professor Winnie Chi, Professor of Nutrition and Dietetics, as well as Dean of the School of Health Sciences at the International Medical University, or IMU. We're discussing the sequencing of food. Now, when it comes to diet and nutrition, of course, we tend to think that it's what we eat as well as how much that matters. And of course, that is important, but there's also something called the sequence of foods to consider. So Prof. Winnie is here with me today to discuss what exactly are the principles of food sequencing, what are its effects on blood glucose, particularly important for people who are managing diabetes here, as well as what might be some right and wrong practices within this concept of food sequencing. Thank you so much for joining me today, Prof. Winnie. Now, as I said, right, the layperson's understanding of nutrition generally revolves around the amount we eat, as well as, of course, certain types of food, what kind of nutrients, macro and micro, that they contain, as well as the calories. Now, I guess looking at that broad picture and considering the rise in the nutrition-related diseases that we're facing today, how would you see this broad understanding of diet and nutrition among us lay people?
So thank you, Xiaoyi, and a very good afternoon to the listeners. Thanks for having me back again in the FM Bigger Picture. I think what you said is very true, Xiaoyi. It is very important in today's scenario where we see a rise in diabetes and obesity, especially in Malaysia, and the prevalence doesn't seem to have gone down. And diet and lifestyle is a major cornerstone of contributing to this, right? So people actually do need to have a very good understanding of calories and nutrients that affect their health, right? And everyone wants to expand their life expectancy, have a good quality of life, and the amount of food that we eat does matter. But I think what over the years, what research has shown us is that we are now understanding more accurately what type of food really can optimize our health and our body weight or prevent these diseases. And much of it focuses on the type of food that we eat. So it's not just about the calories, actually, okay? So a lot of people think if I look at calories, that's enough. But it's not quite enough because we know now that we should be choosing and eating foods which are richer in the nutrients that can protect us against these diseases. So what we do know is that fruits and vegetables are very important. If you're eating your carbs, let's try and choose more whole grain type of carbs. We should lessen our sugar and salt. So this quality of the diet, I think paying more attention to this is also very important.
All right. So Prof. Winnie, I understand that a lot of your work and research is also related to diabetes and diet. And so with diabetes being such a prevalent disease among Malaysians, perhaps we can address some of the beliefs and practices that people do adopt when it comes to managing blood glucose. And I think one of the big ones that we hear is that diabetes caused by eating too much sugar or too much carbs. Can we sort of like understand the principle of what exactly causes diabetes?
Okay, sure. So the audience may know that we actually have two main types of diabetes, right? We've got type 1 diabetes and we've got type 2 diabetes. So we know that sugar definitely doesn't cause type 1 diabetes. Because type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease, you know. So it usually happens in much younger in life, in children, for example, you pick it up by then. So that has got nothing to do with sugars. For type 2 diabetes, the answer is a little bit more complex though, okay. So we know that the main drivers of type 2 diabetes is actually obesity. So being overweight. Because when one is overweight, you get this phenomenon called insulin resistance, where your fat cells make your body cells not so sensitive to insulin, which is the hormone that makes sugar, facilitates sugars to be utilized by the cells. So when we take a lot of sugary foods, it provides a lot of calories, and therefore you tend to put on weight and you become overweight or obese. And coupled with if you have also got other risk factors like strong family history of diabetes, for example, then of course this will increase your risk of diabetes, right? But now we also know that sugar itself may directly affect your blood sugars without and it's got nothing to do with your weight. So in diabetes, it's a condition where your body is unable to process sugars. And therefore, if you take a lot of simple sugars, definitely this will create that situation where your blood sugars are not controlled anymore. The other aspect that I see patients always misunderstand is they think it's only about sweets and sugars, right? And they forget that actually carbohydrate foods are metabolized into sugar. And carbohydrate foods like rice, noodles, you know, breads, these will directly impact your blood sugar as well. So if someone has diabetes already, it is important that they need to control the amount and the type of carbohydrates that they eat. Mm.
So there is a lot of truth in that, that the relationship between sugar, but as well as carbohydrate foods. I guess that then leads on to, if we look at general principles of managing blood glucose when you have diabetes, again, there tends to be this simplistic view of, I can't eat carbs anymore. No more sugar. But you talked also about quality of diet just now. How do we link this?
Okay, so it is really not true that if you have diabetes, you have to completely stay off carbohydrates. I know there are people who go on the ketogenic diet or the low carbohydrate diet. So it is true that carbohydrates, if you eat a lot of it, it will definitely impact your blood sugars, right? But if you don't eat carbohydrate at all, it actually affects the quality of your diet. And there are studies now showing that the very extreme carbohydrate restriction actually do not give you additional benefit. It may even increase your risk of dying. So what we need is a balance of how much carbohydrates you can eat, right? And the type of carbohydrate. So when we deal with, when patients see me, we come up with a meal plan where the carbohydrates is just the right amount for them to lose weight or maintain their weight and also to manage their blood sugar. And we focus more on good quality carbohydrates. So not the refined type, not the kuehs, the roti canais type, you know, but more of things like you can still have rice, but a smaller amount of rice. Certain types of rice actually don't raise your blood sugar, so they have low glycemic index. So brown rice is an example, parboiled rice, basmati rice, you know. Then we talk about if you're eating noodles and so on, control the portion, and wherever possible, go for more whole grain types. So then you can still enjoy carbohydrate without, you know, necessarily making it impact your blood sugar in a negative way.
Do you find that this is particularly challenging considering the Malaysian diet, which can be very heavy on carbs?
Very true, yes. So I think the healthy plate model that the Malaysian government have come up with, that is really very useful for a lot of my patients. So whenever they plate themselves and they, you know, they look at the plate, they know that it's quarter-quarter half. So they're going to take less of the rice, so it covers only quarter of their plate. And then they have some proteins, and a bigger amount of their plate actually comes with vegetables. So I do see my patients now saying that, okay, I opt for two vegetables now. So that is actually a healthier way of doing it. And they see some improvement in their blood sugars.
Obviously, the size of your plate matters as well.
Of course, yes. Obviously, yes.
But with a with something as simple as this visual guide of Sukusuku Sparrow, I presume calorie counting isn't so practical then? Something like that visual representation is more practical?
Yes, I think so. I think patients find that, and a lot of the general public finds that this visual representation is actually easier for them to follow that diet. And actually, by eating this way, indirectly, it also cuts down your calories already because you eat more fruits and veggie, which are, you know, less energy dense.
Mm, all right. So, today we are actually going to talk about something called food sequencing, you know, the order in which you eat certain nutrients or foods or macronutrients, actually. So we'll go for a quick break now and come back and really get into that. What exactly does it mean and how do you practice it, as well as what is its effects on your blood glucose. I'm speaking to Professor Winnie Chi from International Medical University. She's the Dean of the School of Health Sciences as well as a Professor in Nutrition and Dietetics. So we'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to the show with me, T. Xiao Yi. It's our Health and Living show today, and I'm speaking to Professor Winnie Chi, a professor in nutrition and dietetics, as well as the Dean of the School of Health Sciences at the International Medical University, or IMU. We started off talking about a better understanding that has evolved when it comes to diet and nutrition, its impact on diet-related diseases, especially diabetes, and we started going on a little bit into really how, again, the understanding of what causes diabetes and the insulin resistance has evolved as well, looking at general principles when it comes to modifying your diet so that you can better manage your blood glucose. But apart from looking at the amount of calories that you're eating, looking at varying the different food groups in your daily meals, Prof. Winnie, there's something called food sequencing. Now, what exactly is that? And, you know, if you could link it to what we've been talking about, which is the impact of diet and nutrition on our blood glucose.
Right. Thanks, Eric. So this is actually a very simple and yet very exciting area that people have now done quite a bit of research on, the sequence of the food that you eat. So if you, and it's about the order of the food group. So if you think about the healthy plate, the sukusukusaparo, right? What if you were to eat your vegetables first, and then 5 minutes later, you eat your proteins, and then 5 minutes later, only you finish with your carbohydrate, with your rice last. So what brought about this research in this area is because we see currently now in people with diabetes that the increase in blood sugars right after a meal. So whenever the blood sugar spikes after a meal, that actually is an independent risk factor for complications. So the higher your sugar spike after a meal, the more likely you're going to get either, you know, retinopathy, or you're going to have, you know, damage to your nerves and your organs, right? So then what causes this spike is actually also related to your gut hormones. So our gut, our intestine actually do produce hormones that affects the digestion of the various nutrients, and it affects, stimulate your insulin, and it also slow down your gastric emptying. That means slow down the digestion of the food, suppress your appetite, and therefore you eat less. So people started thinking, now what if we were to move this order of food around? Does it affect that gut hormone? And does it bring about lower body weight? And does it improve blood sugar control? So surprisingly so, it does. So now there are quite a few research that shows that if you eat your carbohydrate last, right, and you eat your proteins first, so it started with that. So if you eat your fish first, and then only eat your rice, so they did experiments with that versus people eat the rice first and then only the fish, or rice and fish together. And they found that the one that ate the fish first and not the rice and the rice later, actually the gut hormones response and their blood sugar after the meal was better. So then we ourselves at the Center of Transformative Nutrition and Health in IMU, we did a small study, and this was done by my colleague, Dr. Lee, and she got a group of individuals who are overweight and normal weight. And we did that. So we gave the proteins first and then only the rice last. And we saw that same improvement, so 50% lower blood sugar. And it doesn't matter whether you were overweight or normal weight. It improved that blood sugar level. There are also more studies now done in Japan and Singapore showing the same thing. And more interestingly, they found that if you eat, what if you were to do vegetables first? So veggie, and then 5 minutes later, your protein, and 5 minutes later, your carbohydrate. That was the best effect. It lowered that postprandial the best. So it looks like food sequence is a very simple thing to do, but it can have such a big impact on eventually suppressing appetite, body weight, and improving your blood sugar control.
So am I right in trying to understand this? It's that if you eat your vegetables first and then your protein and your carbs only last.
Last.
It's basically by eating the protein first, you are stimulating the gut hormones to do its job.
Correct. Yes. You're stimulating the gut hormone to do its job. And that gut hormone then attenuate that increase in blood sugar after. So your carbs needs to come last. So if you think about the way of eating in the olden days, traditionally, right? A lot of, you know, look at Chinese dinner, for example. Of course, the amount and the calories still matter. But, you know, the rice comes last. And if you don't ask for it, you don't get that rice last.
True, yeah.
Yeah. So it's quite interesting with this. And I think this is probably one of the very innovative way and simple way that, you know, so I've advocated this to some of my patients. And and what it does also, it makes you eat your vegetables.
Yes.
Because a lot of Malaysians don't eat vegetables. So now that they have a reason for eating the vegetables, it's a carb blocker by itself. It's a natural carb blocker, I tell them.
What does that mean, a carb blocker? A
carbohydrate blocker. You know, nowadays there's so much interest in people saying that, oh, this particular ingredient I eat is a carb blocker. It blocks carbohydrate. But, I mean, that's essentially, you want to block your carbohydrate, eat your vegetables first. So that, and then followed by your protein, and then your carbohydrate last, and you find that, yes, it slows that gastric emptying, right? So the sugars get digested slowly, and then the blood sugars then don't spike. So what's important here for diabetes people is you don't want that blood sugar to spike after your meal.
All right. Now, you talked about sort of like you eat your vegetable first, then 5 minutes later, you
give
eat your proteins.
Yeah. Yeah.
So is that the window that we follow? 5 minutes?
Yes. So in some of the experiments, they wait 10 minutes. In some experiments, they wait 15 minutes. But to be practical, I mean, you know, if you're a fast eater, then you have to kind of wait for a bit and then only start onto your proteins. But in the recent studies that was done in Japan, they didn't wait that long. So they just waited between 5 to 10 minutes. So you chat around a bit more. Then you start eating on your proteins and then you start eating your carbohydrate last.
Okay. I can see this working with, a traditional kind of Malaysian meal that does consist of your vegetables, protein, and whatever your carbs may be, kind of separately. But, you know, we do have a fusion of cuisines now where it may be difficult to separate the food groups.
Correct. That's right. So if you're going for things like nasi goreng or mee hoon goreng and all that, that's not going to work. It's not going to work. Okay. And the current recipes, there's not enough vegetables there to have an impact, right? Or enough protein to have an impact. So I think this works well when we encourage people to eat more of your mixed rice, or if you have your cooking meals at home, that's where it works well. But that's the way to eat anyways, you know. So we should reduce eating a lot of this mixed dishes kind of thing, which actually comes with a lot of carbohydrate, a lot of fats as well. So
and
it doesn't work
when you're
eating
those. A token amount of vegetables.
Yes. One or two strands, and that's about it, right? So we should minimize those food choices and go more with the basics, go back to the basics, you know, of just having our normal traditional meals at home where we have rice, we have meat, and we have vegetables.
Yes, but, you know, everyone who enjoys eating their banana leaf rice with their hands, you know, mixing everything together is going to be quite upset.
Right. Correct. Yes, that's true. So you just have to be mindful as well. So we in the experiments that was done, when you mix everything together, it doesn't have a good impact as if you were to eat it in sequence, right? Mm. So, and we actually did measure in our center when you have mixed meals, how high is that glycemic index? That means the index to show how high does it raise your blood sugar. So it is true that if you mix everything together, the glycemic index is moderate, right? But the impact on blood sugar is you can do better if you were to sequence it. So why not? It's a simple thing to do. And that attenuation or the dampening of the blood sugar rise can be as high as 50%. Mm. So it makes a lot of difference.
Mm. What are some common mistakes that people might make when they're trying to practice food sequencing? I mean, you said for one that amount and calories still matter, right?
Yes,
doesn't mean just because you eat carbs last, it might attenuate the blood sugar rise. Doesn't mean that you can fill your whole plate with it.
Exactly, yes. So you still have to follow the principles of healthy eating first. You know, so in a lot of these experiments and research, they still, you know, they don't ask their subjects to eat two bowls of rice. It's still within the 150 gram that you would normally encourage in terms of healthy eating. Mm. Yeah, so that's important to remember.
Some other don'ts related to this?
Well, not really. The basic principles of ensuring that you keep within your calories, that you don't eat an incredibly oily, you know, or high fatty meal, all those things still applies. Mm. Yeah.
Does it have an impact on body weight?
Yes, it's very interesting. Well, while more studies show that it has more impact on blood sugars, but recent studies have shown that because of the gut hormone, it can also suppress your appetite. So it could, in the long term, affect body weight. And in fact, a study in Japan that was recently published, they looked at it for 6 months in people with diabetes, and they did see a reduction of energy intake and body weight as well, about 0.5 kilogram less body weight as compared to people who don't do food sequencing. Mm. So it looks very promising. Mm. So we probably need to do more studies among Malaysians to see whether, you know, this does have an impact eventually in controlling body weight. I think overall, it just gives you that mindful eating as well. So you're more mindful of how much you eat. So I think that itself, it's already a benefit to individuals.
Mm. It's true. You know, it really makes you stop, pause, consider what you're eating and how much as you are looking stage by stage, right?
Yes, that's right.
It's such a change though. I have to admit, it's such a mindset change to the way we eat.
Yeah, so start with your vegetables, go for your proteins, and then finish off with your carbs.
All right.
And you might find it already full, so you're going to eat less of that carbohydrate already.
I mean, that's the excuse, right? People have wolfed down the carbs and proteins, and then vegetables, I can't eat anymore.
That's right. That's so true.
So speaking of eating your vegetables first, there's also a belief that you should eat your fruits before you start your meal. How does that factor in?
Okay, so this, I've also heard a lot from, you know, from patients and from individuals that I should only eat fruits on empty stomach and so on. So I did a bit of research, like where did this come from? And you know what? This concept of that sequencing in that way came from the mid-1800s. Long time ago. And it was based on this particular professor that it's called the hay diet. And if you Google that, you can read more about it. It's about putting food into alkaline, acidic, and neutral. So his theory was alkaline foods like grains, and then there's acidic foods like your proteins, and then there's neutral foods like your fruits and your vegetable. And he propagates that, you should eat neutral foods on an empty stomach because it's better for digestion. Now, that's in the mid-1800s. Today, we know so much more about foods, about digestion, about hormones. Really, there is simply no more scientific evidence to support that.
Is there any harm in doing it?
Well, probably, is there harm? No. I've not come across people telling me that they have side effects from doing this, right? But I think if you have diabetes and you practice this, you've got to be careful because some of these foods could be high in glycemic index. So if you eat it in an empty stomach, it might just spike your sugar higher. And if you eat it with a meal, actually it attenuates that increase in blood sugar, right? So I don't think we should follow that theory anymore. If you do want to eat that way, follow food sequencing because that seems to have much more science to it.
Mm, all right. I want to go back a little bit to the point you made about there have been some studies showing there is an impact on body weight. Mm-hmm. Would you recommend then that even people without diabetes could practice food sequencing for weight loss?
Yes. In fact, in some of these studies, they were not people with diabetes and they still showed improvements. So it is a mindful way of eating. It encourages you to eat more vegetables and to start off with your vegetable first. It may even, it will stimulate your gut hormone. It will give you satiety. So you end up eating less and that actually will help and will benefit body weight eventually.
How do other methods of managing your blood glucose factor into this practice of food sequencing? I mean, for instance, I know meal replacement products do have a place for some people with diabetes. Some of them need medications and insulin. So what's the bigger picture here?
Okay, so food sequencing is just an add-on. It's something additional that you do to help attenuate. Notwithstanding that, you have to take your medication, of course. If you're looking at meal replacements, in fact, these meal replacements has to be prescribed by a dietitian, preferably. Don't just start it on your own. And then it must be within your calorie recommendations. But they are quite well formulated. Some of these meal replacements are well formulated with this concept of higher protein and stimulating the gut hormones and slowing that emptying as well. So I do have patients who take meal replacement and find that their blood sugars get better, but it must be a replacement. It must be not an addition that I have my roti canai and I still have my meal replacement. That doesn't work that way, right? So these are the common misconceptions, you know. They think that this is like a magic bullet, but it doesn't work that way. It must be within your caloric recommendations, within your carbohydrate recommendations. So if you're going to do meal sequencing and you have a condition like diabetes, please get proper advice from a dietitian. It's all within the calorie recommendations, as I say, all within the carbohydrates that you should eat. And then to give it that additional kick of doing better, you sequence your meal at the same time. But it cannot be a standalone that I don't eat my medication after that. Doesn't work that way.
For anyone who wants to practice food sequencing, should they seek the advice of a dietitian first?
If you do not have any conditions, no. It's just if you're having your mixed rice and you decide to do meal sequencing, go ahead. It should be no harm.
There are some other practices that I came across related to, perhaps this is not sequence so much as combinations of food groups. And I wonder whether there's any sort of scientific evidence or truth to it, right? That you should combine protein and veg or carbs and veg, but not protein and carbs. Have you come across any of these?
Not quite, but I suppose it's, well, now we know better with the science now. We know better that it's probably, you know, you can actually eat all these foods in combination. We all do. And all of us do not have any side effects eating foods in combination. So as I said, because we now understand digestion better, we understand hormones better. All this probably, I mean, all of this doesn't have any scientific basis to it. Unless you've got conditions, like for example, you've got GERD. You know, that you're unable to digest food, or, you know, you've got slowing down of your gut motility, then it's important to work with a doctor, a dietitian, to see. Sometimes, you know, the amount of food you eat matters. Not taking a glass of water after eating a meal matters, you know. So depending on the conditions. But for the general population that do not have any of such health conditions, no, we shouldn't be practicing some of this because it's not scientifically based.
Are there any others that you've come across that you would like to debunk?
The other one is about, I guess, eating breakfast, you know, skipping breakfast. A lot of the patients that I meet, they tend not to eat breakfast and it becomes a habit. I think, and if I ask them, well, have you lost any weight? Has your sugars improved? Not really. So then actually eating regular meals and eating healthy meals still matters. In fact, eating a good breakfast in the morning sets the pace for the day, you know, right? So skipping that meal sometimes make individuals think, oh, I've not had breakfast, so I'll have a bigger meal for lunch. Or I've skipped lunch, so I'll have a bigger meal for dinner. So again, some of these practices, look at ourselves and think about it. Has it really benefited you? But what we do know is that having regular meals and having breakfast is very important. And there are evidence showing that people who eat breakfast actually are better in weight control and they control their diabetes better as well.
Should breakfast be the biggest meal of the day and then subsequently reduce your overall plate as you go through lunch and dinner?
I think it's this concept is more about your overall energy expenditure and your overall energy requirement. If the whole day you've not been eating anything and then for dinner you eat a large meal and then after that you go to bed. So again, it comes back to the total calorie intake. So I've not seen that people who practice that really shows a significant difference in their body weight or in their blood sugar control. So I would say eat regularly, eat according to your calories. Usually breakfast should be around 300, 400 calories. Lunch is about 500, dinner is about 500. So you get about 1,000, 5,000, 8,000 because most of us are quite sedentary. So that should be the recommendation. If you're active, then you can have a little bit more calories. So that's where you need to work with a dietitian to have a good meal plan that's individualized to your own activity level and your control.
Now, intermittent fasting is going to be on everyone's minds as well.
Yes.
What's the role of that in managing diabetes?
Okay, the data now is a lot stronger on intermittent fasting, and it looks like it's not very much different from doing, you know, healthy, low-calorie diets. So the weight loss actually is not any different. So there's more data now showing that. So it looks like it's probably going to go out of fashion eventually, that it's not very much different from practicing healthy eating, low-calorie diets. Mm. Having said that, I think for some of my patients whom they tend to snack a lot at night, like before bed, you know, they like to eat, not because they're hungry, but because it's a habit, then it might be good for you to just say, okay, I'm going to do this. After 7 o'clock, after my dinner, I brush my teeth and I'm not going to eat anything else. And I'll, you know, go to bed. And then the next morning after, you know, around 8, 9 o'clock, I'll have my breakfast. So that's a way of also reducing calorie intake. Mm. So it depends, yeah. But I do not recommend it just because I want to lose weight or I want to control my blood sugars. Mm. The evidence doesn't seem to be there.
For intermittent fasting,
yeah?
Okay. And so Muslims are also celebrating Hari Raya right now. It's 1 month of feasting. Words of advice, especially those who are managing diabetes.
So, of course, during festive seasons, it is counterproductive to tell people, oh, you should be fasting, you know, you shouldn't be enjoying yourselves and, you know, follow healthy eating ways. I think being mindful is very important. So don't let go completely, right? So if you do need to go for tandooris and all that, allow yourself, but be mindful, look at your plate. Are you practicing quarter, half, right? If you're eating a bit more, balance that with physical activity. So ensure that you're active during that time. If you know you're going to eat a big meal during lunch, maybe make your breakfast very light so that you don't overeat. And then make your dinner lighter because you've eaten a big meal during lunch, for example. And keep going with your activity levels, right? And continue to practice this mindful eating. And continue to practice quarter, half. And maybe if you can do food sequencing, why not?
Right. So
eat your carbs last.
So leave the lemang last.
Lemang last, yes, right. Yeah. Go for the sayur first, you know, and then after that have your bit of protein and then go for a bit of your rice later.
I'm struggling.
Right. So maybe that will all help.
I'm struggling to recall whether there's much sayur on offer. Perhaps we need to
Well, I guess people are more aware there still will be some sayur or ulam dish there, right?
So oh, that's lovely. Yes.
With that. Yeah, you can start with that. And monitor yourselves. I think one of the key things that Malaysians fail to do is to self-monitor. So if you weigh yourself once a week, you're going to be able to catch that, oh, I've gained already 2 kilos, you know, so I think I better do something about it. It just creates that awareness. So a lot of my patients who monitor themselves, they tend to put on less weight or even they're able to maintain that weight. If not, they lose weight, right? So self-monitoring is so important. You know, have your wearables. Track your steps, right? You've got phones nowadays that can track your steps. So at least try and do that 8,000, 10,000 steps a day if you know you're going to eat more. So all this is going to help to attenuate that sudden surge in body weight or blood sugars that's going to come during festive seasons.
All right. A final word, Prof, to sort of recap food sequencing.
Okay. So I think what's important in food sequencing is it's an add-on advantage to attenuating body weight and also helping with your blood sugar control. Remember that you still have to keep within your calorie intake. You still keep within your carbohydrate recommendations, but eat your vegetables first, go for your protein next, and eat your carbohydrate last. And that is going to help you reduce that spike that happens after meals. And we know that that spike is related to complications. So the more you can do this in the long term, we have data showing that it helps with your blood sugar control and it helps even with body weight. So all within that big picture of healthy eating, but sequencing your food then helps to even make it better.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Prof. I've been speaking to Prof. Winnie Chi, Professor of Nutrition and Dietetics at International Medical University, where she's also the Dean of the School of Health Sciences. This has been Health and Living BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.